We made this.
Ladies and gentlemen, it was a cold-blooded, premeditated murder.
Hi everyone, welcome to another episode of Red and Buried Podcast. I'm Sarah.
I'm Frankie.
And we have the lovely Hannah King joining us today. Hello, Hannah.
Hi, everyone.
Thank you for being with us.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. Thank you for the invite.
We invited you on, Hannah, because we met at Capital Crime and you were such a lovely bloody delight of a human. And so I just wanted to talk to you more, basically.
It was bloody delight people. Those are the ones you have to watch, though.
That's the thing. Well, that's why I want to keep a closer eye on you. So I invited you on to get... We're going to dig beneath this nice surface. I believe there's a monster lurking beneath.
No one can write such... I was going to say twisted. That's not really fair. But dark book as you can and be entirely pleasant, surely.
We'll see.
We will see. Before we get into uncovering Hannah's dark secrets and true nature, I'm going to read out a little bio about Hannah that I have taken from the internet, and hopefully it's all accurate, so apologies if it's not. Hannah King is a novelist from County Down. Great start, didn't even say County Down, right? She studied both her BA in English and MA in creative writing at Queen's University Belfast, graduating in 2017. Her debut novel, She and I, a literary thriller about claustrophobic friendship and the danger of assumptions, was published in 2022. The TV rights have been optioned and Hannah is working on her second Northern Ireland-based novel. Hannah lives in County Down with her husband-to-be, two adorable dogs and three aquariums. She's also one of the loveliest and sweetest people you could ever have the pleasure of meeting.
Straight from the internet, even that bit.
Yeah, that last line especially, yeah. I found that quite creepy, actually.
All spot on.
Oh, good. Glad to hear it. We've already had a bit of, before Sarah joined, a bit of aquarium-based chat, because three is a lot of aquariums as well.
Would you believe that? Actually, I think now that I'm counting them, I think we have four. So maybe one of them is new since that was written. Two of them are aquariums and two of them are like, they're tanks that are acceptable, like normal people tanks that you can have in your house. And the other two are huge. Like one of them's like 200 liters, I think, if that's not ridiculous.
Wow. Like in my head, it's like the one in Romeo and Juliet that they see each other through. Is it like that?
I mean, yeah, if we went at either side of it, yeah, I suppose it's like that. Yeah, kind of.
Nice.
Four's too many for one house, in my opinion. It's just a normal house. So, you know.
You basically live under the sea at this point.
Essentially, that's the next step, yeah, I think.
Let's jump straight in. I really, really enjoyed your first novel. I hear you're working on a second one at the moment. What stage is that at?
So thank you very much. First off, it gives me a little frisson when people say they like my book, and I feel like I can't look them in the face. thank you. Book two is written. Book two is, I was just saying to Frankie before, I go through stages of, I hate this, this is the worst book anyone's ever written. And then stages of, oh no, I love this idea, this is great, I'm really happy with it. So book two is written and I'm kind of dipping in and out of it. It's changed a little bit since I thought it was a complete first draft. So we'll see, that could take a while. But I'm like halfway through book three and book three is flowing a little bit better. So I feel like book three might become book two, essentially, if it keeps going the way it's going. Sometimes it just happens like that, I think. I think I needed to get another book out to kind of find where I'm going. So that's the stage I'm at. That's the very complicated stage of my life at the moment.
Amazing. How long did it take you to write book two, and how far into the process are you with book three?
Book two, I sat at about that awful, awful 35,000 word mark that everyone hates for like... 5 months, and then I wrote the rest of it in like a month, because I took a month off last year to do it, and I did it in the month, and so not very long for that one. Book three, again, I was sitting around a really awkward word count for a long time, but I'm hoping, I'm going to take the month of April off, I'm going to finish that. I'm hoping to finish that by like mid-May. Like, I mean, she and I took 11 months, but that was with working full time all the time and working night shifts as well. So I think I was a little bit, brain was a little bit addled for the process of writing G&I. But so yeah, these ones are taking less time, but it's because I'm allowing myself time off work. That's the only reason.
Yeah. So. God, 11 months while doing night shift as well. That's pretty
extra
hardcore.
Impressive.
I wrote it by hand actually on my breaks. Like,
what?
Yeah, it felt like a little lost Bronte, like sitting in the office with my looking out the window at night. And wrote that. And then at the weekend, I would kind of just type it up. And that would nearly be like a first edit because it was that stage of it's going from my awful handwriting to being on the screen. So that was like a first edit. It worked. I don't know. I would recommend it. If people are struggling to find time, do it in your break, do it by hand. Just do it like that. It worked for me. I don't know if I could do it.
Have you stuck to that for books 2 and 3 or have you given up on the handwriting?
Book 2, I did a little bit. It's just to get away from the screen. I think we spend so much of our lives absolutely glued to them. And obviously, especially if you do it for work, getting away from the screen is such a massive thing for me. So I kind of make myself carry a notebook around and I'll take advantage of 20 minutes of being free. So a little bit of book 2, was written by hand. Book 3, no, none of it was by hand. It's all been on the computer. But I don't know, I'm trying different things. I'm finding what works for me. It's good. I'm in a good stage of my career where it's the very start and I can just kind of mess around and see what is going to hopefully work eventually.
Bit of experimentation to see
exactly.
What works.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, why not? So let's talk a bit about your wonderful debut, She and I, which I also really thoroughly enjoyed. And what inspired it for you?
The thing with She and I was that, I mean, I wrote it in 11 months in 2019 and 2020, but it was a book that I had been kind of writing in my head for like 5 years, probably. Like I felt like I 100% knew these girls. Like I carried them around with me everywhere I went. I'm really close with my best friend. Neither of us has ever killed anyone. I always feel like I have to put that in because it's usually
legally
a question.
You have to say that. Sure.
Sign
wink, wink.
Something.
Yeah.
So I'm very close with her and I've always been really interested in, I want to write a love story, but not a romantic one. I wouldn't want to write a romantic story and I don't think I could. But I'm really interested in these kind of non-romantic relationships where you would kill for each other or you would die for each other, all of that stuff. So yeah, it was a book I kind of been thinking about for an awful long time until actually I put pen to paper. It took an agent reaching out to me in 2019 because she'd read a short story that I'd written for me to actually say, all right, okay, well, this book that is kind of brewing in my head, okay, I'll actually start writing that down and commit to it. Because I always thought that I would write short stories. I did like throughout uni. That's what I always submitted for like things that you had to do for uni. And I thought, yeah, that's long enough. Like I can't commit to 90,000 words of one thing. But apparently I can. And apparently I really enjoyed it. It was definitely the most enjoyable experience ever, like watching the book kind of grow. Because, you know, a lot of the writing process does take place in your head. Like by the time I was coming to write it down, I mean, I knew what was happening in the next chapter. So it was a really kind of nicely organic experience and I really, really enjoyed it. Books 2 and 3, not so much. These were not in my head, first of all. That's as much as a surprise to me as it is to anybody else reading it. And that's where She and I came from.
So tell us more about your short story that got the attention. So was that in a kind of similar vein to She and I in terms of theme or?
It was quite tame, actually. There were no murders in it. It wasn't very gritty. but I think it was published in, is it a book called Blackbird? It was an anthology of like Queen's University ex-students. It was kind of all put together in a little book and then sent to agencies. The idea was, oh, hopefully somebody will get an agent from this. And then I was lucky enough that it did happen for me that way. It was called A Fair Grief and it was about a couple getting over the death of their son. I haven't read it for a long time, but I think that's what it was about. It was tamer than the stuff that I was writing at the time. And it was a little bit tamer than maybe She and I and my novels have been, but I think my agent wrote and said that she liked the style of it. So we kind of went from there. And because I knew I had someone that was going to read it, I think that's what gave me that push to go, right, okay, well, you need to write it before someone can do that. But, you know, it can be such a lonely process because it's just you and your computer or you and your notebook for such a long time that just the fact that I knew someone would read it just was life-changing. I'm very grateful to her. She just changed everything.
Yeah, that's amazing.
I have to say, the premise of She and I is something that maybe this is my paranoia showing through, but I get quite worried sometimes. Like, you can imagine waking up after a night out or just a night drinking and not having a clue what's gone on, and suddenly this nightmare unfolds around you and, oh, it's, yeah.
Very much so, yeah. I mean, I'm not, you know, I didn't have a particularly interesting like teenage years. but it's always in my head. Even if you get like a little blank spot, like, oh, I'm not exactly sure how we got home. That's really scary. Anything could have happened to you. You could have done anything. And like, some people turn into a completely different person when they're having a drink as well. So you maybe think to yourself, oh, I could be capable of things that me, super me, is not capable of. So yeah, it's an interesting premise. A scary one, now that you think about it. Yeah.
It's also really interesting as well about the friendship aspect of it too, where how far do you go to kind of protect your friend and, you know, keep the story and all that kind of thing? Because it's something that Sarah and I have discussed a lot, I think, in our friendship about if one of us committed murder, would we back the other person up? And we've always been pretty firm on that. We have another friend called Hannah who instantly would crumble and she would give us up. So we've had a few discussions about how to get around that. But it's always good to have a plan in mind, I think.
Just in case you don't know what the future is going to bring. That might be a real thing.
Although, like you say, things happen. You wake up, there's a body there. What are you going to do? You need to figure it out.
Exactly. So. Yeah, me and my best friend would discuss things like that as well. Because I think there's a line everywhere. But where is that line? Is it further than covering up this murder we've committed? I don't know. We'll see.
Good question. Where's the line?
I love that question. I always like asking that question. Everything that I write, I've noticed this recently, is about obsessive love, like romantic, but always obsessive. Maybe that's my thing. I only noticed this recently, all in the similar vein.
Well,
love that.
Better to be obsessed with fictional things as opposed to real people,
sure.
Legally, that we're allowed to talk about on a recorded medium.
Definitely. Yeah.
So one of the questions we ask everyone is, what do you enjoy most about the writing process? And on the flip side, what do you enjoy least? Can you answer that, considering your writing process is changing quite a lot by the sounds of it?
Yeah, I would say I don't have it down yet. I definitely don't have a process. I don't yet know if I'm a plotter or not, because I've done different things for all of them. And I'll have to let you know, I don't know, through sales figures, maybe, which one of them works the best. I don't know. I don't know how that works. I know what I do and don't like. I really don't like anything structural. I don't like changing anything structural, but just because it is so hard. And I think when you're the author and you're so in with the details and you know every single thought these characters have ever had, it's very, very difficult to pull yourself far enough away that you can see the kind of timelines. I find timelines so difficult. I made a massive mistake in She and I, and they were like completely the wrong age or something. I can't even remember. But it took my editor to spot that, saying, I don't think this is right. And I was going, oh my God, no, you're right. You're completely right. But I know them so well, I just didn't even notice this. Yeah. So I find that very difficult. I'm not saying I don't enjoy it, but it's just so hard and it's so time consuming as well. Like, that would nearly take longer than the whole writing thing. Mm. What I like the most is when you go back to read something that you wrote a couple of weeks ago and it's fine, and you read it and you kind of get maybe absorbed in it, where you start enjoying the story instead of
enjoying your own genius. Yeah,
maybe. Oh wow, this is a good book. Oh wait, no, I wrote this. I'm loving this. This book's really good. Who wrote this? So I like coming back to a manuscript. I like taking a break and coming back a while later and actually seeing, okay, no, it's going to be fine. Everything's fine. You don't need to panic. Everything's going to be okay. That's really satisfying. It makes it kind of worth it to come back to something after a good break.
Mm. And obviously, you're from Northern Ireland and the books are set in Northern Ireland. I guess how important to you is that setting for your narratives, and what does it mean to you as you write them?
The girls were always County Down girls, like in the 5 years that I had to be with them without them being anywhere, very much so. And I think the small town was always going to be really important to me. And the beach is important to me because it is just important to me and I love it. And why not? If you can set a book at the coast, why wouldn't you? Because it's the best. I think there's something about like small town mentality. Like if you have teenagers in a small town, you can kind of make them do anything. And I would believe it, because they're so bored and they don't have enough to do, that they will, you know, experiment with these drugs or invent their own drugs. And I find it more believable because they're not doing anything else. Like they're hanging out in each other's houses 7 days a week. They only see each other really. They don't really have a grasp of what's going on outside of their little bubbles. So there's something really nice about small town life. And I think Jude and Keely were always going to be County Down girls. So it's a small town in County Down. This sounds like I'm starting to sing here, rhyme here.
It was a beautiful folk song.
Beautiful. So they were always going to be that. And I think I really like it. The town's called Vito Bridge, and I've used it again in book 3 because I really do like it. I feel like I know it. It's like an amalgamation of where I live if I lived at the sea, like, so with that, mm-hmm. An amalgamation of my town and my nearest kind of sea town. So I would like to live there in Vito Bridge. I've just invented where I want to live and put them there, basically.
Yeah, why not? And with that, I read on the internet that your next book is set there also. Is the third one set there too?
So yes, book two is set in like a fictional island off the coast of County Down. We all love a good island.
Yeah.
It's like a kind of small island, but it's very like up and coming and it gets lots of tourists, but it's completely fictional. I don't think such a place exists. And then book three is set back in Vito Bridge, in the exact same place where Jude and Keely are. Wow. So yeah, I think I'll always write set in Northern Ireland. Setting's very important to me. I think even before I'm 100% okay with my characters, almost even before I'm 100% sure what's going to happen plot-wise, I need to know where I am, definitely. I need to know what are the kind of limits here and what are the possibilities here before I start any sort of writing.
And you're writing, presumably, because you were born there and you live there now, that it's what you know to a degree as well to inform it.
Yeah.
Apart and from I think some added bits.
Yeah, and I think it's quite obvious, I think, when an author hasn't lived somewhere or when it's like somewhere that, you know, they kind of know from TV, but they'd have never actually been there.
Yeah.
I think it's safest as well, just to, I'll keep me where I know.
You just look out the window wrong. Or like pop out.
Yeah.
Look around.
Yeah, literally.
Handy.
Inspo.
And I believe from knowing you briefly as I have, that you are also a big reader. Is that fair to say?
Read a lot, yeah. Recently, I only read like crime thrillers. I haven't read anything like meatier than that for a couple of years, probably since I started writing She and I. I don't know, sort of fell in love with crime again writing myself. So
I found coming out of uni, having studied English after that, I was done. I was
yes.
I never want to read another classic again. Give me the brain fluff.
Well, I started, if it, my English degree, Sarah and I both did English as well. We studied Agatha Christie, one of my modules. I had a great time.
Did not either.
Oh, no. Man.
It would have been a very different degree. We'd have
yeah,
that.
Yeah, yeah. That was great. I did a Marple and a Poirot. I was living the dream. Mm-hmm.
All right.
Yeah, sorry to humble brag.
Yeah. Well, in that case, love to know, what was the last book that you read and absolutely loved?
I mean, the book that jumps to mind is The Appeal, Janice Hallett's The Appeal. I feel like reading Janice Hallett is an experience. It's not just lifting a book. It's like you're going on a journey. Strap in. That's like how you feel about all of Janice Hallett's books. So The Appeal, I mean, I devoured it in like 2 days. I haven't done that with a book for a while. I also read, it's not published yet, it's out in May, I think. It's called Unsolved by Heather Critchlow. I'm not sure if you've heard of that, but it's actually, you guys might like it because it is about a podcaster. It's about a guy whose sister went missing when he was a kid, and now he does like true crime podcasting. Ooh. And he kind of tries to get to the bottom of other things that have happened. It was excellent. It was very, very well written, and it's the start of a series, so it's going to be just the first of a few. So that was excellent.
Brilliant.
Nice to get in the beginning of a series as well and not have to go back and work your way through. Nice.
Very much so.
Well, The Appeal is sitting on my TBR already, but I'll definitely bump that one up in that case.
She's everywhere as well. Everywhere I look, everyone's raving about Janice Hallett. So
they should be. Yeah. It's one of those ones that, you know, sometimes you see a book everywhere and you read it and you're like, what was that? That how disappointing. Yeah. She's like the opposite. You see it everywhere and then you're like, oh, right, okay. That's
fair
why.
Enough.
That's why. Fair enough, Janice.
We'll give it to her.
It was a debut as well, I think. The Appeal was a debut. So like,
wow. Yeah. Wow. Barnstormer. Talking back about your books again and about, considering this is your debut, but we don't know your other two books yet, so I'm intrigued. If you were to be a character from one of your books, who would you be and why?
Interesting. Well, yes. So the two detectives in She and I, one of them is Jess Curran.
Mm-hmm.
I think I liked her. I liked writing her so much that I'm going to save her and I'm going to write about her again at some point. I haven't got the book planned, but I know I want her. I think, is there something with crime novelists that we kind of all in our hearts also really want to be detectives as well?
Yes.
Yeah.
I think there's something there.
Even as a reader, I think so.
Yeah, yeah, I think there's that. So I think if I could be one of my characters, I would love to be Jess, because she's a little bit spiky and she can keep up with the humor. And she's, I think, a good detective. We don't know that much about her after She and I kind of have a backstory in my head that I'm sort of playing around with, but I would like to be here because I think she's pretty cool. She gets to be a detective, which is just so dreamy.
probably less dreamy in real life.
Yeah, but definitely. Yeah. It's very glamorized, isn't it? Like, yeah. But that's fine.
It's all like the bureaucracy stuff. It's like, it seems a bit boring, whatever. But, you know, the fun stuff, like the murder stuff.
Yeah.
The
murder stuff. If I could choose to just do those bits. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
The can fun you make bits. That call?
Yeah.
Do you think we'll get to see her backstory in a future book, maybe one day?
Yes, I think so. I've kind of got very rough. I have the notes app on my phone is just filled with. Here's an idea. Here's an idea. Oh, here's an idea for a scene, or like, here's an idea for like a feeling. If I kind of put them together, there might be a whole novel in there. I don't know, but there's definitely going to be a little bit more of Jess because I think she's got an interesting backstory, I think.
Oh, brilliant.
We've actually discussed this before with a few other authors. Do you think realistically, now that you kind of got your head in crime, you read a lot of crime books, you've written, you're on your third now, do you think you could solve a murder?
I think I could give it a very good go.
And that's the spirit that you need to go into it with. So yeah. I think that's half the battle, isn't it?
I think I could. But then, you know, like my mum got her living room done up a while ago and I didn't notice. And now I'm thinking, maybe I'm the least observant person because she was saying, oh, what do you think? And I'm looking around this completely different room. Oh, about what? What are you talking about? So I'm thinking, I don't think I should be in charge of anything like that. Yeah.
You might have noticed there was a dead body in there or something.
Yeah, you'd hope. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'd give it a go. I would love to do it. I would like to be like brought along, you know, like they do like a ride along in the US, yeah. Like for a long, and just like stand beside them quietly and take notes while real detectives go on a case. I would love to do that. I don't know if they offer that in Northern Ireland. I'll ask.
You should find out.
Yeah, worth an ask. Or end up being like, well, I imagine the only way I could get into this kind of thing is if I do a Marple and I'm just nosy and annoying enough that they're like, fine, just come in. Jesus, stop lurking.
It's easier
crime
for
scene.
People to let you do it. Yeah, very much.
All of your close friends and family stop being murdered. Then you're like, fine, okay, you can come along, Jesus.
That's what it takes, yeah.
Yeah, it's worth sacrificing a few. Sure.
So another question that we ask every author, and I'm always fascinated by the answers to these, is, what typical crime genre trope do you hate or are sick of? Maybe hate's a too strong word.
So having read a lot of crime the last few years, most relationships that you see in crime books are really, really unhealthy, or it's just really sad and they hate each other. There's not a lot of actual nice relationships, because you can still write a crime book. There can still be awful things happening, but they could go home at the end of the day to someone that they at least like.
Yeah.
And they tend not to. Like, there tends to be a lot of history there, a lot of like bitterness there, and they hate each other. But I think Jane Casey is really good at this. So Jane Casey, the Maeve Kerrigan series, I started reading those recently. That was another one. I read the first one and then found out she has like 10 or 11. I was like, oh, this is brilliant. This is like Christmas time. And she's really good at, like, she puts the humor in whenever they're in the police station, but there's some really good relationships in there, and it doesn't have to all be doom and gloom all the time, which I think she needs, because the books are so gritty, like really weird graphic stuff happens in them. But I think, yeah, I'm kind of sick of just reading all these awful relationships and then coming away from the book feeling like that story was great. I'm a little bit sad now though.
Yeah.
I guess it's a really easy way to completely isolate a character, so it moves the plot along quickly, but it's
unrealistic.
It's a little bit unrealistic.
Yeah. That's really interesting. We had Nikki French on recently, so Nikki and Sean, and they were saying that something that they find quite frustrating is when the character almost seems to know they're in a crime book. And it kind of feels like that sometimes when you're reading a book and all of the relationships are awful, everything's going wrong, everything's very serious. And that does kind of take you out of it almost, because it's just too unreal that everything would be that horrendous all the time.
Yeah, because you'd like to think that even in the middle of an investigation, people go home to get some sleep and they have conversations that aren't about the case, and they'll kind of have other worries about stuff that happened to them last week. And I feel like, yeah, you're right. It's like they know they're in a crime book. That's exactly what it's like. Yeah.
Yeah.
Another thing that actually came to my mind there was, I feel like in detective books now, like, and crime books, the writers are usually trying to be a little bit different, a little bit clever, and that's fine. But often I find the detective doesn't really do a whole lot of detecting. So, I mean, I'm thinking of like Poirot and Jonathan Creek solve the case, and they're the only ones who solve it. But obviously with the kind of the way that books are written now, you've got loads of different points of view and all this stuff, which is fine. I love doing that. I cannot write from one point of view. But it's often you kind of either, you know, what's happened from like halfway through and then the detective catches on. I feel like we don't see that much of a detective actually sitting working things out and the detective coming to the conclusion. It's kind of like it's there and they are the ones who say it out loud and that's it. So maybe I'll do that. Maybe I'll we'll take the reins on that. I'll make the new Jonathan Creek.
Yeah, what a big start to revelation. Yeah.
Yeah, because we've also discussed relatively recently, I forget what episode it was, where they don't tend to gather everybody into a room, all the suspects, and then reveal who the killer is much these days or in real life. Because I guess for a number of reasons, probably because you shouldn't have a killer in a room full of innocent people and you don't know what they're going to do. It doesn't always end up very well. But, you know, maybe that's what the police force is missing in this day and age.
And it's very satisfying to read that or to watch that play out, knowing that the killer's in the room. Who's he going to name? Who's he going to point the finger at? I mean, that's satisfying. It works for a reason.
And then the detective reveals how they got there. And I've said before to Sarah, one of my dreams is to be on the periphery of a crime. Like, I'm not directly involved, but I'm kind of a witness, sort of. And then I get to be in the room for that moment when they do the big reveal and I can just watch it happen.
Lifetime dream. Yeah, 100%.
Oh my God. Yeah. Obviously, ideally, Poirot, I'm aware he's not real, but that kind of...
That guy,
that's a dream. Yeah. Oh, man. Sarah, are we at that point?
We are at that point.
I can't even make you do it because you did the last one. Okay, so Hannah, I'm afraid. I'm afraid I have some terrible news.
Oh dear, what?
Yeah, well, and also given the themes of She and I think this could be an interesting answer to this question.
Ooh.
You have committed a terrible crime, Hannah.
Okay.
We all know about it. You've been caught. First of all, what crime do you think you've committed that's so bad, spoiler, you've got the death penalty?
Oh dear.
Yeah, whoopsie.
My bad. I mean, something to do with road rage. A road rage of mine that just gets really out of hand. Someone's done something awful to me and I feel completely justified in whatever I've done.
Road rage, I think, is fine. I think that's very justified often.
Yeah, agreed.
Mm-hmm. So you like basically like ran them over, then reversed, ran over them again, maybe three or four times back and forth.
And then drove off feeling much better about it. Like, oh yeah, thank God that's done.
But ultimately, you weren't very subtle about it because everyone saw and you've now been caught.
Yep, okay. I'm with you.
And you're such a demon on the road at this point that the courts have decided that you can't be trusted to live anymore. Unfortunately.
Yep.
Okay. Yep. So that's what's happened. Fine. And I'm very sorry to report that, unfortunately, as I spoiled before, you have been given the death penalty, but it's not all doom and gloom, much like we said. The good news is we're going to make you the death row meal of your dreams before you are put to death.
Okay.
So what will your order be?
My order would be it would entirely consist of desserts. So it would be a baked Alaska.
Oh, yes.
Which I have only had like twice in my life. Do you know how hard it is to find baked Alaska like in a supermarket?
That's so true. It's not common these days, is it?
It's nowhere. I don't think we have it in this country. I'm starting to think.
Have you ever made it?
No. Could I make it myself?
Of course you could.
I don't know.
What do you mean? Of course you could. People make it, so you can make it.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. So baked Alaska.
I believe in you.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
And also eaten mess. Some eaten mess as well. And a glass of New Zealand Sauvignon Blanc. And then I would be die happy. That would be okay.
So a meringue-based kind of dessert is your preference,
Oh yeah, they both are, yeah. I've just realised they're kind of similar. But yeah.
You like what you like. That's good choices.
Can't go wrong with those two.
I love that you've gone for all sweet. That's great.
There's a fascinating lack of chocolate there, though.
Well, maybe there will be some chocolate on the side. Okay. A little box of Lindt or something.
As long as you're not a chocolate hater.
No, no. Oh, God. Okay. Sarah, please.
If she was Sarah, hang on.
Gone.
Kick off.
Gone.
Okay, wow. And so straight into sweet, no savoury options. A lot of respect for that. And you've got a nice bottle of wine to go with it.
Mm-hmm.
That's the dream. Okay, we can do that for you. No problem at all.
What a way to go.
Very good way to go. So full of meringue and maybe the odd Lindor ball here and there. Unfortunately, you have now been put to death. R.I.P. Sarah, I hand to you now. I hand Hannah's dead body over to you.
Yeah, very sad. Apparently I'm in charge of burying you, but you can take any one book you like in your coffin with you to be with you for eternity. What's it going to be?
Ooh, that's a good question. Has anyone ever said like a book about how not to be buried alive or like how to escape? Do people say that? Yeah.
Fiona Cummins, I think it was, had a book about, she said a book about becoming a vampire so that you can come back to life.
that's not a bad idea. That's not a bad choice. I don't want to steal Fiona's answer, though.
You can steal it.
Do people pick their favourite book?
We have a really interesting mix between a lot of people have a childhood favourite or an adulthood favourite, and others have one that made kind of a big impact on them as well.
Yeah. I was going to say, like, Notes on a Scandal kind of made me want to be a writer, because I think, I mean, I was literally doing an English degree at the time, or creative writing degree at the time, so that probably came before that. But I think I read Notes on a Scandal, and it doesn't do anything fancy. It's kind of, it's a reasonably linear timeline. It's written from Barbara's point of view, but there's something so creepy and so disturbing and so special about like every line in that book. And I remember finishing it for the first time and thinking, that was incredible, but I think I could have a go at doing something that's not that dissimilar. So I would say, in terms of like, oh, books that changed my life, like that's definitely up there. I read it like every other month for like a year. I don't know, I was going through a weird time.
It's all right, Sarah's done that with Mamma Mia. Like, she watches it on the reg at least once a week, right, Sarah?
Oh, well, 2020,
that was a dark period.
I had a friend who watched Love Actually like every day for 2 months. It wasn't even around Christmas time. It was like the summer. What?
Was it at least during COVID when we all lost our minds?
No.
That's a cry for help.
She lost her mind all by herself.
Yeah. I mean, I did that with Speed when I was probably about 13. I watched it like every day for a month. But I feel that there's a lot there. It's a rich.
A lot to unpack. In all of these stories, there's a lot to unpack.
Exactly. Interesting. Okay. Wow. I love Actually every day for 2 months.
Like, it might have been longer, actually. I'll text her and ask, how long did you watch Love Actually? I'll text her now.
I'd love to know what you get on like a third watch of it in 3 days.
It's not one of those movies where, oh, I get this big metaphor now. It's not one of those. No. You don't need to watch that 60 times.
Wow. That is fascinating. That might be worse than Mamma Mia once a week. I don't know, actually.
Thank you.
I don't know, though, actually. Now that I've said it, I don't know if I mean that. And also, it occurred to me when you were talking about writing She and I, you wrote that during lockdown then.
I finished it during lockdown. I think I started in June 2019 and finished it in like May 2020. So yeah, the last couple of thousand were definitely over lockdown. I was living with my parents because I literally sold my apartment on like the 20th of February, and then the world ended 2 weeks later.
No.
And I couldn't move into my house. So I moved in with my parents. It was really good. It was the best thing ever. People cooked for me like 3 meals a day. It was really good. Yeah.
Wow. And it must be quite helpful for finishing writing a book, because you're like, well, I have to stay in, so I might as well write.
It was pretty good. Yeah. It was definitely, it was a useful time. Not a wonderful time, it was useful career-wise. I might still be writing it now if we hadn't had that. Might still be there.
Wow. So some good did come out of lockdown.
Some good.
Just your book, specifically.
Just my book. That's enough.
Yep.
Yeah.
That's worth more than it. Enough.
Big statement.
It's just very, very, very impressive that you use your time so productively.
Thank you.
As I said, Sarah watched Mamma Mia quite a lot. Not to shame her again, but I feel like it bears repeating somewhat.
Yeah, I also played a lot of Animal Crossing. And
yes, I did that
drank
too.
Drank a lot of wine. Yeah, it was... I definitely didn't produce a book anyway.
But memories.
Not a lived life to write about it. That's what you were doing. You were in your lived life phase.
That's it.
It's coming. The book's coming.
Let's go with that.
Write some Animal Crossing fan fiction or something.
I can guarantee there's some out there. I'm going to look that up when we hang up.
If you can think of it, it exists in fanfiction.
That's the world we live in. I do a separate, another podcast, my Poirot podcast about the TV show, and we found out that there's a lot of Poirot fan fiction out there.
Is it all written by you?
Not all. mine is a lot filthier than that. So... But I haven't actually read any of it, but I feel like I need to do a deep dive. Fan fiction is fascinating.
It really is. That's a whole other thing, isn't it?
Here's a question. We've never normally asked this one, but it suddenly come to me. If you had to write fan fiction about something, a book or a film or a TV show or whatever, what would you write fan fiction about? We can all take our time with this. Sarah, you think about it too.
That's a big question. I mean, probably Friends. Because I feel like...
Oh, that's nice.
Those are characters that... Yeah, that's pretty tame, isn't it?
Have a murder in it.
Yeah, there would have to be. I don't think I could physically write anything like that without having a murder.
Gunther's dead.
Dark.
He actually is dead, isn't he? Sorry, the actor.
Yeah,
I feel bad
he
now.
Is. Yeah.
So I didn't mean that. Sorry, internet.
You always have to take things too far,
don't
you?
I forgot. Sorry.
Every time.
Yes. Sarah, what would yours be?
I mean, I don't think it will shock you, Frankie, to hear that I have dipped a toe into not writing fan fiction, but reading.
Oh, for a second, I was about to lose my mind. You've been secretly writing fan fiction this entire time.
No, I don't have the attention span, but I have been known to enjoy a Harry Potter fan fiction or two in my younger years, at least. Nowadays, I don't know.
Can I ask a question about Harry Potter fan fiction? Is it all sexy? Does it get filthy? I imagine it does. Or does it just depend on which one
you
read?
There's a lot of filth, but no, there's a lot of not filth as well.
They ship a lot of unusual couples in the Harry Potter one, don't they? I mean, they have like Draco and Dumbledore and stuff. They have they'll just put any pair together they can think of.
Yeah, I think it's another of those things. It's out there. If you can think about it, it's out there.
Yeah.
I think there's, Frank, I don't know if you've read or watched them, Hannah. Frankie hasn't. But there's a giant squid in the lake on the castle grounds. I'm pretty sure there's some like dirty giant squid fan fiction out there.
Well, that's news to me.
That's crossing into like hentai territory, isn't it? That kind of anime. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, it could be very good. I don't know. I didn't.
No judgment on
me.
The Red and Berry podcast, to each their own.
I don't know what I'd write fan fiction about.
Mamma Mia.
I'll be glass.
Fair enough.
Yeah. What about you, Frankie?
I feel like I can't say poir right now because I've kind of just been talking about it. Looking around my room.
That would be a bold move to try and write Poirot fanfiction.
But it would all be erotic. That it would just instantly, like, it would be nothing to do with murder. It's just about, like, you know.
With you as a self-insert.
To me. Yeah. on my podcast that I do, Labours of Hercule with Adam, we have discussed, we have a theory that every Christmas, Sarah doesn't know this because she's never listened to my podcast. She's a very supportive friend. Every Christmas, Miss Lemon and Hastings, they basically book into a hotel and just go to town on each other for the whole of Christmas. And there's never talk about it. Once a year, they meet up, have a sexy Christmas, and then just go back to work as if nothing's happened in January.
I buy that.
Seriously. Sarah, how do you feel about that? You look upset.
You look upset.
Yeah, absolutely not.
Why not?
Hastings is a sweet creature who would never go to town on any woman.
No, but I think it's Miss Lemon's in control of the situation, you see. She's ruthlessly efficient and she knows what she wants, and Hastings is more than happy to give it to her. Anyway, this is...
It's not that, maybe the show like I thought I was coming on.
No.
Better. It's not normally, Hannah, I'm sorry.
I bring out the worst in you.
Apparently
just very excited to see you. Well, Hannah, thank you for putting up with us and thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you so much for having me.
Sorry it took such a weird turn.
No, I love it. This is the best thing. Podcasts aren't normally like this. This is so much better. I loved it.
Especially other book podcasts. You know, I've had some nice messages from people that have listened saying, like, I really like your podcast. Like, it's really silly. You don't really take anything seriously, do you? I was like, oh, I don't know if that's a compliment or not. Thanks.
Giving the people what they want, Frankie. That's all that matters.
Lemon and Hastings. Lastings?
I was going to say Hemen. What their ship name is.
Hemen sounds too much like Hyman.
It
sorry.
Does.
Okay, Hannah, where can people follow you on social media?
I have Twitter. I'm really bad at Twitter, but please come follow me on Twitter. Han King. I think I'm just called Han King. That's how bad I am at Twitter. Who knows what my handle is? I
think
it's just, that'll be somewhere. Yeah. And yeah, I have Instagram as well. Han King 7, I think. That's how good I am at social media.
Very
my,
good.
My publishers love me.
But we always say this as well. I always feel bad for authors because you're expected to be good at everything. And it's like, you didn't become an author to have a social media account. You wanted to write.
Yeah.
So.
I know so many people that are so good at it. I have friends that just, the stuff they post, I'm like, oh yes, I'm going to save that for
Liv
later.
Matthews.
And, yeah. She's good.
She's amazing.
She's just
it.
Good at everything though. She's just one she of those is. Girls. She's just wonderful.
Yeah, she is a lovely, wonderful, sunshine person.
She really is. Just like you.
Oh, stop. I talk about Hyman way too much to be sunshine.
It's twice in 2 minutes. See? That's a lot.
Sarah, save me. Talk about something else.
And if anyone's not following us on social media, you can find us at Red and Buried Podcast.
Very good.
Yep, perfect.
Yep, forget Sarah forgets the name week. Of the podcast quite a lot, Hannah.
That's a hard one. It's a good, hard name.
Yes. Yes, it is. Apparently, it's very difficult for the person that helped me create it. So,
well, I mean, very loosely. I basically show up and talk for half an hour and that's my contribution done.
But very lucky.
Yeah. You couldn't do it without me. No. Yes, thank you everyone for listening, and thank you again, Hannah, for joining us. It's been an absolute pleasure for us, if not you.
Yes. Sorry, Hannah. Go and buy Hannah's wonderful book, she and I, and also get ready for the next two. I'm very excited. Yes. Will you come back again and talk about the future ones, please?
I would love to. I will force myself on your podcast, whether you want me or not. Definitely.
I'm going to write that plot line in my fan fiction. Cool. Thanks for listening, everyone. I need to go and have a cold shower or something.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye.
If you're a fan of British comedy, particularly broadcast on the BBC, that's been going for a decade or three, try Shipwrecked, Shipwrecked, Shipwrecked and Comatose, covering all of Red Dwarf, including those additional specials, heroes and the foes. Anything else? Well, who knows? So find us on your podcast apps and be greeted by some friendly chaps and Mark's deep obsession with all cats. It's Shipwrecked, Shipwrecked, Shipwrecked and Comatose. We're not on Insta, it's Twitter's hard mode. Red Dwarf Pods are social. Both subscribe and enjoy us a load.